Does anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? There were so many classes yesterday. From the presentation that I gave. Yes, what do you remember, Paul?
Prabhupada was saying that if Krishna accepts something from your hand, your life will be successful.
Your life is successful. Present tense. This life is successful if we actually engage in some devotional service and Krishna accepts it. Thank you. Anyone else remember anything? Yes. Yes. Thank you. Bhakti paritam asnami, Krishna says, I will take it. It's offered with bhakti. Yes, did someone else raise their hand? Yeah. Krishna gives the facility. He makes it very simple, just so we can begin. Why don't we just move on quickly now to the next one? This is the part the third. And over there is part the first. Yeah, Vishwajit Prabhu, you have part the first. This is part the third though. Okay. Space bar, I think, should begin it.
Jaya Rama.
We're supposed to do part the second because we only did part the first. Okay, you can move it forward a little bit this time because we already had the introduction. Okay. Okay, so noble. In his room in Mayapur, he's on Mayapur. Very strong but compassionate eyes. Very realized. What do those eyes see? Such death. Bhakti is the key.
Krishna is neither hungry nor wants anything from you. For your benefit, for our benefit, Krishna is prepared to take a little leaf, little flower, little water, which is available anywhere, all over the world, without any price. Even if I am a very poor man, I can pick up a flower, a little leaf, patram, and little fruit, and water is available everywhere. Everything is available. Krishna does not particularly say that you give me such fruit, such flower. Any fruit, any flower he is prepared to take, accept, provided you are a bhakta. Otherwise, even if you prepare very nice palatable dishes, he will not accept a single of them. It is the bhakti. Krishna is very much anxious to see that you have become a bhakta. Then your problem is solved.
Very simple segment. Raise your hand if you have no problem that you need solving. Raise your hand if you have at least one problem that needs solving. Okay. You don't have to raise your hand, Aditya. You're too young. No problems. So all problems, Prabhupada is saying, is going to be solved. So let's take this one by one. Okay, go to the next. That's the first segment of what Prabhupada said. For your benefit, for our benefit. So Prabhupada is... Children, 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 a little bit softly. For your benefit, for our benefit, Prabhupada is including himself in this. Not just saying you really need this, but he's including himself in this. Krishna is prepared for our benefit to take meaning accept a little leaf, a little flower, a little water, which is available anywhere all over the world without any price. So Krishna is willing to accept the simplest things from us. So he's not asking for anything elaborate, because he already possesses everything in existence. Sadaishwarya Purnam. He possesses all opulence, all strength, or wealth, or beauty, or knowledge, or fame, and even complete detachment from everything. So what does he want with a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, as he describes in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? He's asking us, please give me something. I'm not making it difficult for you. I'm making it very easy for you. A leaf, a flower, as Prabhupada said, and a little water, they're available anywhere, all over the world, without any price. The devotees used to take this a little seriously, too seriously, in the sense that they would take other people's flowers without any price, early in the morning. But not anymore. But they're available. Flowers, leaves, some water, they're available anywhere. Certainly Krishna has no need for leaves and flowers or some water. But he says, if you will give me this with bhakti, with some devotion, even if I'm a poor man, there is no prerequisite, no external qualification for making an offering to Krishna. Even if I'm a very poor man, I can pick up a flower. I can pick up a leaf, patram. Patram means leaf. And a little fruit, phalam. And water is available everywhere. Everything is available to make an offering to the Supreme Lord. Everything is available except the bhakti. That is very difficult to come by. What does bhakti mean? In Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, he defines it, and Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes it in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Rupa Goswami. Anya bilasita sunyam. What does that mean? Abhilas means desires. All other desires, I'm giving you something. Here, take it, my dear Lord. But all other desires that I have are sunyam or zero. Because often when we give something, we tend to be like shopkeepers. A shopkeeper is happy to give you so many goods. They'll give you whatever. But it is not only a giving that goes on in the shop, it's a taking too. They'll give you, but only after taking. And for a shopkeeper to do well, he has to take more than he gives. So this is the mentality that we tend to go into offering something to Krishna with. Yes, Krishna, I will give you something, but without the bhakti as defined by Srila Rupa Goswami, anya abhilasita sunyam. I want something back. That's the tendency. Either on the jnana, karma, anavrita level. Either on the level of I want some knowledge, or I want liberation, I want freedom from this misery, this problem, or I want some material good, some karma back. So Rupa Goswami explains that this is not actually bhakti, because bhakti is anya, abhila, anything, any desire other than I'm giving this to you for your pleasure. Anukulena, and the mood has to be favorable. Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam. To cultivate, to expand one's Krishna bhakti. This is the definition. This is bhakti uttama. This is actual bhakti, pure devotional service. That when one makes offerings to Krishna, just because it is natural to offer something to the Supreme Lord. And please, my dear Lord, as Prabhupada explained in the section we heard yesterday, just by the, here's what you want. You've asked me for this, and I'm giving you what you want. I'm not giving you exactly what I want, but it's because it's for your pleasure, therefore it's done in a way that it is satisfying for you. So please accept it, and all I want from my offering is one thing, that you'll be pleased. That's my only desire. This is pure love. It may not be fully developed. It may not be on the highest, most exalted level or platform of Braja Bhakti, of devotional service like the residents of Vrindavan perform. But this is pure, a pure offering. It is just done for the pleasure of the beloved. And this is what causes Krishna to accept even something as insignificant as a leaf, a flower, or a little bit of water. These are not hard to come by. But again, it's the unmotivated purity of bhakti that is somewhat hard to come by. Why? Why is it so hard to come by? Because deep in our heart, every living entity, every soul, every person is feeling experiencing what I call an existential emptiness. Some great lack, that something is missing. We feel something is missing from our existence. We feel incomplete. And we go through our life trying to add different things to our life to fill up the emptiness in the heart. So people get married, and that doesn't quite fill up the emptiness. And then, I don't mean to insult people who are getting married or anything like that, or are happily married, But there's still always something missing, so therefore children. And that doesn't fill up the emptiness. The first one doesn't. Except if the ones are so nice like these over here, of course. And then there's a second one, and a third one, and a fourth one, and a fifth one, and a sixth one, and a seventh one, and an eighth one, and a ninth one. And even if we had 100,000 million children, which is quite a big family, it still wouldn't fill up the emptiness. So therefore, we look for it somewhere else. We maybe find a different partner. We exchange, well, this one didn't work out. I want a new model. And just like I upgrade my computer, maybe this is contemporary thinking, I'll upgrade my partner. And they stop calling them, they don't say wives or husbands nowadays so much, they say my partner, which implies some temporary arrangement. It's, yeah, because there's actually, that's the philosophy. As long as we're satisfying each other, fulfilling each other's needs, filling up the emptiness, then we're partners. But as soon as we don't satisfy each other, commitment finished. Because the commitment is only to me and my satisfaction, which is the point. The point is that we can take all the money in the world and achieve that, or we could take all our ambitions in the world and achieve those, and whatever, all the power, we can accumulate so much power and control even a whole country or a whole world, and it will still not fill up the existential emptiness, the big hole in the heart, because that hole is on a different level. It's on a spiritual level. The thing missing is on a spiritual level, and no matter how much matter and material things we add to the empty part missing, it doesn't add up to spiritual. So we experience the negative side of that, the dissatisfaction side. And even if we find someone who brings us great, great satisfaction, and we often do find someone, some relationship that brings us satisfaction, but then it's temporary. It's temporary. And it ends with the departure of the soul from the body, and the person, the relationship is gone, and we cry real tears because it's over, and there's nothing we can do about it. That person, that soul has moved on. The body may be there, but the person, the soul moves on. Another frustration. So what Krishna is telling us and what Prabhupada wants us to not only understand but realize. What's the difference between understanding and realizing? Understanding jnana or knowledge means that you know it. And realizing it means you act on it. Wisdom. So what Prabhupada wants to tell us here in this section is that the very nature of the soul in the material world, as we spoke about yesterday, there is an incompatibility because we are eternal. We experience ourselves. It's not something theoretical. We all experience our eternality because we were all young. We were all babies. And then we grew up to be young boys and young girls, and then teenage boys and girls, and then 20-year-olds, and then 25-year-olds, and 30-year-olds, and 35-years-olds, or whatever. And that body changes continuously. Komaram, jovanam, jara. From boyhood or girlhood to youth to old age. But me, the person, is fixed. My intelligence changes. My mind changes. But me, who I am, the person, the feeling, the experience of me as an individual, it remains constant throughout all the different changes of body and also all the different changes of mind and growth of intelligence and experience too. The person remains the same. I remain the same. This is Krishna's essential message, foundational message in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2 and chapter 13 and onward. So we are stuck with a material misconception of who we are, trying to fill the emptiness through matter due to a basic misconception of being the body. So what Prabhupada is explaining here is that we are not our bodies. We are, what are we? We are Krishnas. We are eternally Krishnas, part and parcel servant, individuals. We're individuals. Forever we are individuals. And to even know that we are eternal is partial understanding of our identity. We are eternal, but eternally Krishnas. We are in relationship. And that's the part that's missing from our life. That's the cause of the emptiness. It's the lack or turning our back on the essential relationship that I am Krishna's servant. Now, how many times have I heard this? How many times have I have read this? How many times I've sat on a seat and spoken it? And how many times the minute I stop either reading or speaking or hearing, I completely forget about it? That I'm a servant. It's unavoidable. It is who I am. Like sugar is constitutionally by nature sweet. I am not by nature sweet, but I'm a servant. It's unavoidable, constitutional, foundational. Unavoidable means no matter how I tried to avoid it, it's unavoidable. I have to serve. So when we begin the process of turning to Krishna for our service, accepting the fact that, as one in Bhakti Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami, he says, the beginning of bhakti is a doubt of all things. It's a doubt. What is the doubt? Maybe it's true. Maybe it's actually true that I am eternal and that I am Krishna's. Maybe they're right. He said that's the beginning. Prabhupada was very confrontational on this point. He would put it right in front of you that you're Krishna's servant. Now serve. So what here is being described is Prabhupada's compassionately telling us very strongly, but also he's pointing out how Krishna is so compassionate. And some of the pastimes we spoke yesterday about Krishna were illustrating his compassion. Like with the fruit seller. She gave fruit, he gave prema bhakti and jewels. She was simple. Simple in the sense, not in the sense of unintelligent, but simple in the sense of not complicated. She was attracted to Krishna and she wanted to give him something. Very simple. And she did it in a simple way because he was so cute as he walked towards her. He was a stream of existential sweetness. Walking towards her with the grains in his hand, He was just so attractive with his golden ankle bells jingling and the sweet smile upon his face, asking her for fruit, and she gave him all the fruit that she could. Just out of the simplicity of our heart. Oh, where has that simplicity gone from my heart? That's what material life, it steals our simplicity. It steals, because why? Why does it steal our simplicity? Because life gives us so many wounds and injuries that one feels it's very dangerous to be simple. Because what happens if you're simple? You'll be the only one, and everyone will take advantage of you. So we take this and apply this to Krishna too, unconsciously or partially conscious, that we're afraid. We're frightened of giving ourselves to Krishna because of that same thought that was mentioned yesterday. If I give myself to Krishna in a simple way, who will take care of me? I'll be like a lamb in a flock of wolves. Of course, we forget that we're not quite lambs ourselves. We do have our fangs, and we do bite. But these are grown. So here, Prabhupada is stressing the compassion of Krishna. Every person can begin this process. Begin this process. One thing I find that's very interesting in my mentality is that here I am, so innocent, such a nice person, who never does anything wrong and never hurts anyone or anything, and I'm afraid of being hurt. And then when I get hurt, I'm such an innocent person. How did this possibly ever happen to me? Who's ever sitting below that microphone should be careful right now, because it's already dropped its... You're laughing now, but you're below the microphone, so be careful. Yeah, this system... the last one needs a double. Yes. No. Yes. It doesn't make a difference if it's there, but it needs some double support. So, what Prabhupada is speaking about is Krishna's compassion in making it very simple to take first steps to Him. The steps may be tentative, like baby steps, but even a great journey begins with a first step. We have to take first steps. So Krishna says, just offer me with some devotion, a leaf, a fruit, flower, some water, and you offer it to please me, anya bilasita sunyam, gyanakama anavita anakulena krishna anushilanam, bhakti uttamam. And this is devotion. And this you're offering, even if it's on one level insignificant, if it's done with some love, devotion means love, then I will accept it. And as Prabhupada said previously, if Krishna accepts your offering, your life is successful. The greatest problem of existence is solved. And everything is available. It's not hard to get these things. But again, that desire, the desire to make an offering to Krishna just simply for His pleasure, that is the part that is not available either everywhere or somehow or another. It's not available cheaply. Okay, go to the next one. And so Prabhupada's still in the section that we just heard him say. But Krishna does not particularly say, you give me such and such fruit, such flower, any fruit. Talking more about Krishna's liberality. His making it easy for us to begin our journey towards him, towards our eternal and natural position to again become in relationship with him. This is all that it takes. And practically speaking, actually speaking, this mentality of let me do something for Krishna's pleasure, it's that simple mentality that just has to be continued throughout our day that makes that we string together this type of desire, let me do something for your pleasure, let me do something for your pleasure. Even if I'm working and have my job or whatever, how can I act in this situation in such a way that you will be pleased with me? Once that desire grows within the heart, there is no end to it. The end, rather, is Goloka Vrindavan. When the sweet taste, sweet and, as Prabhupada insisted, natural taste that comes to the heart, when one actually engages in a selfless act of love to Krishna, because it's natural, the experience is so pleasing. And it's so much on a different level than our usual experience of consciousness, which is always, instead of giving, it's always taking, 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 taking. And even when I'm giving, it's with the thought of taking. So there is such a difference in quality when we regain a hint of our natural position in relationship with Krishna. That naturally we want to increase that experience. So that experience of serving Krishna with devotion, serving Krishna without asking anything, serving God, serving the Supreme Lord. Why? Because we are by nature inextricably connected to him as servants. Because this is who we are. And it's always, when we're in our right position, it's natural to feel satisfied and happy. And especially because in relationship with Krishna, the consciousness, our true consciousness comes out, which is ecstatic. And again, we're trying to fill up that lack of satisfaction with matter. Matter. And it simply doesn't work. Incompatible. So Krishna liberally says any fruit, any flower, he's prepared to take, accept, provided you are a bhakta. There are so many pastimes about this. There is one famous one from the Mahabharata, when Krishna went to the palace of Duryodhana as a messenger, a peace messenger from Yudhisthira Maharaj. He went and said, the Pandavas say, because Duryodhana was very inimical, his heart was envious. And when one is envious, one is not a well-wisher of others. When one is envious, one's heart becomes hard like a rock. And it's a very, very uncomfortable consciousness to be in. Srila Narottama Das Thakur compares the experience of envy to having a spear in the heart. We could be happy with a spear in the heart. no matter what our situation is. No. So that is the nature of envy. So Duryodhana was very envious of the Pandavas. And Yudhisthira, who was goodness personified, sent a message with Krishna, and Krishna delivered it. And he said, we don't want to fight, because Duryodhana had stolen the whole kingdom. We don't want to fight, Yudhisthira told Duryodhana. But we are rulers by nature. We are warriors. So at least give us, there are five of us, and we must rule. That's our nature. It's our dharma. Give us five villages. Really, we are the emperors of the world, but just give us at least, just give us five villages. Krishna carried that message to Duryodhana, and Duryodhana replied, what to speak of being able to give you five villages? I cannot even give you, I will not even give you, I will not give you enough land to stick a needle through. That's envy. No satisfaction for you. Die. Who cares? So, the battle, of course, of Kurukshetra was the last result of this, of the envious mentality of Duryodhana. But after that, Duryodhana wanted to bring Krishna on his side. So what he did was offer Krishna a wonderful meal. So many delicacies. Because when you feed someone, they become very happy with you. Especially if the someone happens to be a man. In a man's body, they can be like angry and growling, and you just feed them, and then they... Good boy, good boy. So Duryodhana wanted to feed Krishna. And Duryodhana was such a character because he thought himself so great, and he was so proud. He would eat from like golden dishes himself. And he would take one spoonful from each dish, and he wouldn't take a second spoonful from the same dish because he didn't think it was appropriate that he would eat anyone's remnants, even his own. He was quite a character. He was full of himself, as one would say. So he offered Krishna a great, great feast, and Krishna wouldn't eat anything. He wouldn't touch any of the food that he was offering. He wouldn't look at it. Because Duryodhana was envious. He wasn't a devotee. He wasn't the well-wisher of anyone. What to speak of Krishna? What to speak of acting for Krishna's pleasure? So Krishna refused. He's prepared to eat anything, but he'll not accept anything. He will eat anything, but he won't accept anything if it's not offered with devotion. Duryodhana had duplicity in his consciousness, not devotion. He wanted something from Krishna. So Krishna just left, and Duryodhana was very upset. And he tried to capture Krishna, tie him up. And Krishna just laughed. And he revealed a portion of his universal form to Duryodhana, saying, you want to tie me up. Please understand who you are dealing with here. And you better be careful also, because the Pandavas are my devotees. But Duryodhana didn't care. And then Krishna just walked out. And he walked to the home of Vidura. And by this time, Krishna was very hungry. And Vidura wasn't there, but his wife, whose name was... No. Nor was she Mrs. Vidura, or... or Vidurini, or her name was Sulabha. What does Sulabha mean?
Simple.
Simple, to obtain, to get. What? And she was able to get the greatest thing very simply, because Krishna walked into her house and she was so surprised, it was unannounced. Krishna said, "I'm so hungry." And she said, "I'll quickly cook for you." And she said, "No, you don't understand how hungry I am. I want something to eat. I want it now. But there's nothing cooked. All we have is some bananas. Well, bring me the bananas then." And she was so ecstatic. Because after all, Krishna is so beautiful. And he's so effulgent, means charismatic, we say. Charisma means power. He's so beautiful. He's so charming. He's so sweet. He's so intelligent. He's so attractive. And she was a devotee of Krishna, as was her husband Vidur. And in her ecstasy, she began to unpeel the bananas. And in her ecstasy, she was a bit... And she started handing Krishna the banana peels to eat. Famous story. And Krishna started eating them. And she was throwing away the bananas and handing Krishna the banana peels. And Krishna was eating them and becoming satisfied because she was a devotee. Because, as we heard yesterday, Krishna can eat fire. He can eat in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when he displays his universal form to Arjuna, he eats all the Pandavas, he eats all the Kurus, and he eats all the armies. He eats everything in his universal form. They see everything going into Arjuna, sees everything entering his mouth. And he was quite, as the universal form, he's non-veg. He eats everything. Kalosmin, Loka Chaya Krit, everything in existence, and he devours. For him, it's all his energy. But what he wants is the bhakti. And to act, to please him, we give him what he wants. Which he says very simply, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. So, otherwise, even if we prepare very nice palatable dishes, he'll not accept a single portion, morsel of it. Krishna is hungry for the bhakti. On the last day, I'll read something that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about this. Very, very sweet, but we'll leave it on that part to the last day. So when we're offering something to Krishna, there is such a tendency, and I'll say this from experience, to just be external in the offering and go through the externals of it, and forget what is it that makes Krishna want to accept the service that I am doing. And that's the bhakti, that I'm doing this to please you. My Lord, please be pleased by this. Let me do it in such a way that you're happy with it, that it pleases you. Taking myself out of the center, and usually so enwrapped in my mind and thinking this and that and this and that and my selfishness and my petty problems and this and this and that, I forget all about Krishna. And it comes up embarrassingly when I'm chanting japa, when I'm chanting Gayatri Mantra, that I'm chanting, doing the externals, but where is Krishna? And therefore no taste comes, because no Krishna is there. Krishna consciousness. No, Krishna is there in the consciousness. And there is the fault. And there in the fault by what Prabhupada is saying, it's very clear to understand what the rectification of the fault is, and the rectification is devotion, acting for the pleasure of Krishna. Or, because Krishna sometimes seems so far away, acting for the pleasure of Krishna's devotees. Guru, Vaishnavas, Prabhupada. Just get out of the center, the false ego, the illusion that I am the center of everything and the whole thing is revolving around me and my problems and my this and me this and today this and tomorrow that and yesterday this happened and this person said this to me, 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 and just replace it with how can I do something for the pleasure of Krishna. And that's what we are trying to learn. And from that, in the japa, in the mantras, in the kirtan, in the chanting, in the hearing, in the speaking, in the reading, in the working, in the offering of a leaf, a fruit, a flower, this is what is to be gained. That mentality, that consciousness, that I am Krishna's servant, and let me act in my natural position of serving him. Very simple to understand. Difficult to apply unless we have bhakti in our heart. So, go to the next one. And then, it is the bhakti. Krishna is very much anxious to see that you have become a bhakta. He wants that. Why? Why does Krishna... Why? Anxious is a heavy word. What's a synonym of anxious? Huh? Eager. But eager with tension added. Stressed. Stress? Krishna is in anxiety. And therefore he comes. So many avatars. He comes as Shastri. He comes. He empowers the devotees. He comes in the form of his holy names. He comes in the form of the deity, Sri Vigraha. He comes in the form of... He speaks the Bhagavad Gita out of his compassion, because we are here in the material world and suffering. So if we follow Krishna's instructions and become bhaktas, which means acting with bhakti, a bhakta is one who acts with bhakti, which means just doing something for Krishna's pleasure in a natural and simple way, anyabhilasitasanyam, not trying to take anything in return. In other words, a loving exchange. If we can do that, then our problem is solved. And I think this is this the last part, or is there another one? No, that's on this section. That's the last one. Then our problem is solved. Not going up loud. Look at Prabhupada's eyes, they're really fascinating. When one was with Prabhupada, one really had the experience that one was with someone not of this world, from a different realm, because indeed his consciousness was, as we're speaking of, that it wasn't of the material world, and it was very clear, because he was full of bhakti. His story is so famous, how at the age of 70 He left Sri Vrindavan Dham to preach all over the world. And what was impelling him? The desire of his Guru Maharaj to please him, the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to please him, to please Radha and Krishna. It was all about pleasing others. And he had to take the position of acharya, of great powerful teacher, but there was no ego, false ego involved. It wasn't about him, it was about pleasing Krishna and doing what it was required to please Krishna. And according to how we act, and this is quite a heavy point, according to how we act, we will get a different result. It really depends on us and our freedom. We have a freedom to act in bhakti or to not act, to act selfishly. We have maybe not complete freedom. Like if I decide from now on I'm going to act with full bhakti only for Krishna's pleasure, it's not a mental adjustment, an intellectual adjustment. I can do it like that. It's a cultivation, a difference in taste. Bhakti is from the spiritual realm. Because Krishna cannot be satisfied by something of this realm. It's from the spiritual realm. So therefore it is the bhakti that satisfies Krishna, not the leaf, the fruit, the flower, the water, or whatever. So, although we can't go like this usually and be great bhaktis by our intellectual or mental decisions like that, we can take our steps forward. And we have choice in this way. We always have free choice to take a step forward to Krishna. Or, on the other hand, to not take a step forward to Krishna. To take another step in the direction of doing something in my usual selfish way. Freedom. So, I wanted to tell one pastime that illustrates this. When Krishna, to the extreme, when Krishna left Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, especially the Braja Gopis, they were heartbroken. Even though when Krishna left Dhotikam, Ayasya iti dhotikai, Krishna Shantvayam Asha Suprema. With great love, Krishna sent a message to the Braja Gopis saying, Ayasye, I'm returning. But still, they weren't satisfied. They just were lamenting. Because for them, and this is what love in the highest extreme is, for them, one moment of separation from Krishna, Yuga Yutam Nameshena, was like thousands of years. This was the nature of their love. The blinking of their eyes caused them to miss Krishna. But yet Krishna left Vrindavan on one level, and then Akura took him by chariot. First they stopped at the Yamuna River at a place called Akurgat. Raise your hand if you've been to Akurgat. Yes, very good. Yes, very good. And there, Krishna decided to reciprocate with Akura's devotion, which was very different from the devotion of the Brajabasis. But Krishna and Balaram were on the chariot, and Akura went to bathe in the river. And he saw Krishna Balaram in the form of Anantashesha and Vishnu. So he was shocked because he just left them on the chariot. So he went back there to the chariot and they were still there, and he came back and he said his mantra and he offered prayers to them, and then they disappeared from his vision, and then he came back to the chariot. And he was, and Krishna very cutely said to him, oh, because he saw the unlimitedly powerful Lord in the water. So Krishna very cutely said to him, oh, Uncle Akura, you look very amazed. Have you seen something in the water that amazed you? And Akura very intelligently replied, when I see you, what could be more amazing than that? Because he knew that Krishna was the source of what he saw in the water, of the form, of different forms of the Lord. So seeing you, who's unlimitedly powerful, who is the Lord, but in a two-armed form, what could be more wonderful than that? Everything is within you. So anyway, Akura then drove Krishna to Mathura. And there, the cowherd men had arrived already. They had left just after Krishna left, but they went through the forest and Krishna went in a different way. And Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys had already arrived in Mathura. And they didn't go into the city. They waited outside in the gardens. And they were in so much anxiety. Why? Because Krishna hadn't arrived yet. Because all the residents of Vrindavan, they just have so much love for Krishna. And one part of love is anxiety about your beloved. So Nanda Maharaj kept on saying, Krishna's not here yet. Where is he? And he kept sending the boys out. Go on the road and see if you can see it. Tell me when Krishna's coming. Climb a tree. Come down and tell me when Krishna's coming, when you can see the chariot. So continuously, they were just thinking, where is Krishna? When is Krishna coming? This is actually the consciousness to when one chants Krishna's names. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Why is my consciousness so covered? Why I can't see Krishna? How can I serve you, Krishna? Like that, not mechanical. So in any case, Krishna did come. And Akura had just driven Krishna. He had been with Krishna and Balaram. And the last thing that he wanted to do was leave them. So he said, please, please come to my house and purify my house. And Krishna, being very kind, what did he say? Yeah, he said, yes. Yes, but later. After I kill Kamsa, after I perform my mission here, then I will come to your house. So Krishna, maybe we could open some more windows and doors and... And if it was heavy, you would have to beware now. It was a brick or something. No, open that one. If it opens, and we get some cross air. Oh. Okay. Okay, good. So, Krishna was there in Mathura, and it was sort of in the afternoon. And Krishna had grown up his whole life in the village. So he was just arrived in a city for the first time. He who knows everything. So of course he wanted to go out into the city and see what was there. What's a city like with all those big buildings and this and that? So he took his friends with him and they went out into the city of Mathura. And all the people of Mathura, they had heard about Krishna before. They knew well about him. And they knew him also as the son of Vasudev. And they knew that he had been hiding out of fear of Kamsa. And they knew that Kamsa had called him for the wrestling match, which was going to take place after the ceremony of the stringing of the great powerful bow of Lord Shiva. And Krishna was wandering through the city, and the people of Mathura, having heard about all beautiful, wonderful Krishna, now they had the opportunity to see him for the first time. And they were amazed. The ladies went on the roofs of the houses and threw flower petals, even though he was, Kamsa considered him his enemy. All the people of Mathura, mostly, they loved Krishna because he was so wonderful and attractive. So the people were offering prayers to Krishna. Brahmins came out and welcomed him with coconuts and lamps. And then, because Krishna was dressed in his village clothes, of course they were beautiful. But not, you don't wear the same thing when you're on, in the village, just like the devotees who live here. When you have to go to the city, when I used to live in Gita Nagari, one of the farms, we used to say we had town clothes. So we'd put on our town clothes when we went to the city. You don't go looking like a village boy. So Krishna, there was going to be a big ceremony, so Krishna wanted to be, because Krishna is such a fancy dresser, he's the best of dresses. And he has very extraordinary flamboyant taste, too. Peacock feathers in his hair and decorations, very beautiful, and really bright clothes and things like that, and fine silk and jewelry. This is what he likes to wear. So, while he was walking down the street, he saw Kamsa's washerman, the dhobi and dyer, the washerman who also dyed clothes. And Krishna walked right over to him and very politely said to the washerman, "Please, I want these clothes." On one level, it was outrageous. But on the deepest level, it wasn't at all, because he's the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, and everything ultimately belongs to him. And also, it's not at all outrageous, because Kamsa, I'll tell you what, so Krishna said, if you give me, because he was a washerman. Now, washermen are not considered the most highly placed persons in society either. He said, "You give me this and you'll get all benefits. You give me this. You give to me the fruit of your work, what you do, and all benefit will come to you." And the washerman, being a servant in his mind of a very bad master, of Kamsa, and this is the danger of all you who work in offices, because one of the things about being in an office is you necessarily have a boss. And very soon he's not the boss, he becomes my boss. And when you have a boss, naturally one tries to please one's boss. It's just inherent in the psychology. And if you try to please the boss, you have to act in such a way that you please your boss. And then you have to know what his mind is like. And then you start getting his mind. So the washerman had acquired a mind just like Kamsa's, because he was considering himself the greatest of fortunate persons, because not only was he a washerman, but he was the king's washerman. So there was even pride there. "I am the king's washerman." And Krishna said, "You give me all this fancy clothes, I want it." And the washerman replied, saying, "You shouldn't ask like this. You should understand that these are the king's clothes. And if you try to take the things that belong to the king, you'll be in the greatest trouble. The king's men, when they hear about it..." And he spoke very harshly and threatening to Krishna, which is not something that's appropriate to do, because he's the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he said, "If you do this, the king, when the king's men hear about this, they'll come, they'll be angry at you, they'll throw you in prison, they'll plunder all your possessions, they'll kill you. Go away, go away. You shouldn't ask things meant for the king. Because that's, he was saying that's, you what right do you have to take things from the king? But the king happened to be Kamsa, who had put his father in prison, who had stolen the kingdom from his father, and he was thinking himself the king, and the foolish servant of the thief, this king, Kamsa, who was demonic and was a Rakshasa, and he was killing the children of his sister. He was proud of him, and Krishna became so angry with him because he wanted to teach Kamsa some lessons right in the beginning, because his parents were in prison. Just because they were the parents of Krishna. And Krishna just with his hand went like that and chopped off his head. And then Krishna took the clothes anyway. He dressed, he took the clothes, and because if there's different ways to say things, and how we speak often is a product of our mentality. The king, the washerman, could have said, "If I give you these clothes, dear Krishna, of course I'd like to give you these clothes. After all, you're the prince. You're the best of the Yadus. Could you close the windows? It's so cold in here." What a universe this is. We're already living in the igloo over there. Who told you to open those windows? It's getting so hot already. Maybe open it a little bit. Thank you. So, Krishna took the clothes, and of course all the washerman's friends who were saying, "Yeah, yeah," they all ran very quickly. Krishna took the clothes that he wanted, the fancy clothes, the yellow, the bright kingly colors, because he was going to go into the wrestling arena, and he wanted to be dressed properly for this event. So he took the clothes, Balaram took the clothes that he wanted, the cowherd boys all took the clothes they wanted, and they just left the rest. And they just kept on walking. And then Krishna next saw, because now he had clothes, but he needed some decorations. So he next saw what Prabhupada in the Krishna book calls the tailor, but the literal translation is more a weaver. So this weaver, he as soon as he saw Krishna, in a completely different mood, he just wanted to do some service. Now that's natural. To serve is natural. So he immediately made Krishna some very soft decorations that were gold and beautiful. Because Krishna would need soft decorations because he was going to wrestle with these huge wrestlers, Chinora Mastika. And when you're wrestling, if you have hard pieces of gold and decorations, it's going to hurt your body. So he got very, very soft decorations. And next, Krishna had beautiful new clothes, fine decorations, and Krishna, of course, benedicted that weaver, tailor, by giving him, he gave him happiness in this life, and in his next life he would go to the spiritual world. This is what he did. He was a tailor. The washerman was a washerman and a dyer of clothes. The tailor was a weaver and a tailor. And they were just doing, and a tailor isn't the most highly placed position either. Not a great philosopher, a tailor, weaver. And then, because Krishna is who he is, Next person he saw was Sudama, who was a Mali. What is a Mali? He was a gardener who made garlands of flowers. Beautiful garlands. And when Sudama saw Krishna, he immediately was so thrilled because Krishna is so beautiful. He's the best of the Yadavas. And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he knew this. According to the different mentalities of people, when they see Krishna, they have different realizations. So this Sudama immediately started offering wonderful prayers to Krishna. He said, Krishna, you are the cause of all causes, and you've descended to bestow the greatest good on everyone. You are unbiased and equal to all. It is not by accident in the middle of this pastime. He says that Krishna is unbiased and equal to all. Yayatam mam prapadyante. But yet, one person, he chops off the head, and the next person, he awards them Vaikuntha, Sarupya, liberation. But yet Krishna is equal to all, but he reciprocates with everyone according to how we approach him. And therefore, Krishna is recommending that we approach him with bhakti. Because then, because we can't realize Krishna by our own power. But when we have devotion, when we have love for Krishna, he reveals himself. And the more devotion we have for Krishna, the more naturally he allows us to understand who he is, what his qualities are. And this is just completely natural. We do the same thing. The first time you meet someone, they may be nice people, but you don't immediately just telling them about the fight you had with your wife yesterday, or what to speak of your overdrawn on your credit cards. You don't talk about that because you're just starting a relationship with them. But someone who you have a very deep relationship with, completely trusting, who you have love for and who loves you, then you can tell that person anything and everything. And my experience is that if you, in your whole life, if you find 1, 2, 3 people that you can tell everything to, open your heart up completely to, with no fear that it's not going to, you'll hear it on BBC News tomorrow or something, what you just told him in confidence, and that he'll use it on you later, or whatever. No. It's the love and the relationship that causes the trust that allows you to reveal who you actually are in your most secret, confidential activities, thoughts, etc. Krishna is like that, or rather we are like that because Krishna is like that. It's completely natural for a human being. Where there is love and trust, there is confidentiality. Where there is love and there is trust. When there is no trust, means no love. And when there's no love, there won't be trust. And that's what people experience in this world. Just a lack of love and a lack of trust. And because of that, so much loneliness. So this Sudama, the garland maker, he knew who Krishna was. And just by hearing about Krishna, because Krishna was 12 kilometers away in Vrindavan, and everyone would be talking. Krishna did this. And this comes out when Krishna enters the wrestling arena. They say, oh, Krishna, all the people of Mathura say, oh, you have killed Bakasura, you have done this, you have done that, you have killed this one, you have... And they get some of the facts wrong, because when people generally pass on information, there's a tendency for the facts to get a little bit twisted, a little bit. But he knew who Krishna was, because everyone, when Krishna's activities are going on, when they're devotees, their minds are captivated by Krishna. Naturally, they talk about Krishna all the time, because that's what their mind is dwelling on. So they began to speak So the Sudama began to glorify Krishna. You are equal to all. So interesting, after he's just chopped off the head of the washerman and given the weaver Goloka, that doesn't sound like Vaikuntha. That doesn't sound like Krishna is being equal to all. But he is, according to how we approach him, according to our mentality, we will see him differently, and we will have a different one relationship with him or another. And therefore, as we mentioned on the first day, when Krishna enters the wrestling arena, this what we're reading, we're hearing about now. This is chapter 41, and then in chapter 43, at the end of chapter 43 of the 10th canto, Krishna enters the wrestling arena. Different people just see him in different, completely different ways. Raso Vaisa, he is the reservoir of all relationships, and whatever we want is available in him. So he was being equal to the consciousness, according to the consciousness which people approach him. So that's very, very interesting. If you think about that, think about what you see in the world. And especially, I've learned this little trick. Think, what do you think the people need to change? What everyone else needs to change. Consider that. What everyone else, what people are doing that are really bothering you. And I see that, I've started to see that as a mirror of my own consciousness. Try it sometime. What the change has to take place in the world, and that's a good indication of what you have to change. I see with me, it's like that, unfortunately. It's much easier if the world changes, but it's very hard to change the world. Make that impossible. So then, he asked the florist, the mali, the garland maker, said to Krishna, "How can I serve you? How can I serve you? Please tell me what I can do for you." And Krishna didn't say anything. But the garland maker knew, Sudama knew, because he was a garland maker. And what, after all, did he have to give to Krishna? So he went inside and he got the most beautiful, two garlands. One for Balaram and one for Krishna. But he gave the most beautiful one to Krishna. And Krishna was pleased. And he says, the garland maker said, Sudama said, "You reciprocate with your devotees' loving worship, regardless of their birth or situation, because you are only interested in bhakti. Because, after all, whatever situation we are in is just temporary, a matter of what we did in last life or previous lives, and we, on the other hand, are eternal. And Krishna wants from us and will reciprocate from what the eternal soul has to give. And that's bhakti. And the expression, the things that we give, the tangible, practical things that we give are the gesture, or should be the gesture, born out of the mood of bhakti. They are not the end in themselves, but is the external manifestation of the internal mood. And that's what Krishna wants. He tastes the internal mood from the individual soul. He's hungry for that. That's what gives him his appetite. That's what made him reject the food of Duryodhana. He didn't want to taste that consciousness. And he was even eating the banana peels of Sulabha, Vidura's wife, because it was her consciousness was delectable, tasty. And this is what everyone is longing, and we all know this, when someone has affection for us and they call us by name, it attracts our mind. And if someone who's calling us or wants something from us at the end of a day, and they call our name, we think, oh, what do they want? They want more. I'm already so tired. Why don't, I'm exhausted. But when there is love, that's what gives taste to Krishna, to each and every one of us. And therefore we heard of yesterday in the dealings between the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're very, very, very sweet and careful because they don't want to cause any inconvenience and pain, but they have to explain something. So they do it in a very, very, very intelligent and sweet way. And we'll hear tonight even. I think we'll hear this one tonight. When Mahaprabhu was in Vrindavan, he's in a dangerous position from the point of view of the people who are with him, taking care of him. Balabhattacharya, because Mahaprabhu gets near the Yamuna and he jumps in and he goes unconscious and Balabhadra pulls him out. And he's in so much anxiety because of love. So he's talking to the Brahmana and saying, this is actually a dangerous situation for Mahaprabhu. I think we should leave Vrindavan, because as we heard, the very name Vrindavan, just the sound vibration of Vrindavan, when Mahaprabhu was elsewhere, would throw Mahaprabhu into ecstasy. What to speak of being in Vrindavan and seeing the peacocks with their bluish necks and seeing Giriraj Govardhan. He was always in an internal mood of ecstasy, practically speaking. And then when he'd see the Yamuna, he might go unconscious in his ecstasy, faint. So Balabhadra Bhattacharya thought, I have to take him out. And he consulted with the Sanodhya Brahmana, and they concluded, yes, I will tell him we have to leave because it's unsafe for you, for him, Mahaprabhu. But then when he talked to him and said, he said, oh, we have to leave Vrindavan because this is so much anxiety for me. So many people come to you every day asking, inviting you over to the house. It's given me such a headache, basically. It's causing me so much anxiety. I want to leave Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu therefore said, yes. I saw this also with Srila Prabhupada. One time, I've mentioned this before, and I wrote it in my glorious master book. We were in Hong Kong, and we were walking on the peak. There's a little mountain on the top in Hong Kong, on the Hong Kong Island. And it was cold. It was something like this, and it was windy and wet. And Prabhupada didn't have a heavy coat. And he was already quite elderly, 76 perhaps, 75. And he was walking. And I said, it's so cold, isn't it? Prabhupada said, no. And I was thinking, if Prabhupada might get sick, this would be very bad. So it's so cold. You know, sorry. But soon as I said, I figured out how to do it by the grace of God, I said, Prabhupada, I'm so cold. And he said, oh, let's go back immediately. So this is the sweetness, this is the kind of gentility that's born out, not what I was doing was, I'm not on that level, so it would be born out of anything, but whatever, selfishness, etc. But Mahaprabhu's leelas, the dealings in Krishna leela, everything is delectable, tasty, if it is born out of a true affection, out of bhakti. And the externals can be there, like with Duryodhana, the big arrangement of food is there. But who wants to taste that consciousness? So this is the real challenge of life, especially devotional life. Let the world do what it's going to do, because the world is going to do what it's going to do. But what about my bhakti? What about my bhakti? What about my lack of bhakti, to put the question even more directly? What about my complete self-absorption continuously? And then I make my offerings to Krishna, and he accepts it by the mercy of Prabhupada. But what about my consciousness? So, in contemporary words, they say there are four stages of becoming expert at something. They say first is unconscious incompetence. And then the next stage is conscious incompetence, which is a very painful stage when you realize consciously how incompetent you are. But it's much better than being unaware of how incompetent you are, because at least when you're consciously incompetent, you know you're not doing it properly, so you have the opportunity to change. If you're unconscious and incompetent, you're dangerous for you and for everyone else. And then above that, you become, now I have to be like this, I have to stop. You become conscious of your incompetence, so you become consciously competent. So you're consciously trying very hard. I should do it in such a way that Krishna will please me. I should do this like this. I should do it like this. So it's a little artificial. And that's the way we practice Vaidhi Bhakti. It's a bit like that. It's a strain in that sense. But we're consciously trying to do the right thing and do it in the right way, in the right consciousness. And then above that, they say unconscious competence, which means it's completely natural, like after you've been riding a bicycle for a long time. That's a simple example. You don't even have to think about it. So bhakti is like that. When it's like the residents of Vrindavan, they don't have to think, oh, I should love Krishna and I should act in such a way that Krishna is pleased, because it's the most spontaneous, natural thing for them to do, because they love him. And why do they love him? Because he's Krishna and they are who they are. Just because he's Krishna, they love him. And therefore everything in Vrindavan works so amazingly just to heighten the experiences, the ecstasies of love. Oh, Krishna was walking in Mathura also. And there he was. He was dressed in nice clothes then. And he had nice ornaments on. And he was wearing a nice flower garland. So if you dress the deities, if you're used to dressing the deities, what's the next thing that has to come? Maybe he had a crown already. What do you need to do? You need all the sense in that, you know, all that really makes, that's the final touch that makes, that is so pleasing to Krishna. So then Krishna saw another servant of Kamsa, whose name was Kubja, who was a hunchback lady. And Krishna started teasing her, and she was the one that had all the scents and ointments for the decoration of Kamsa. And he said, oh, beautiful lady, please give me the... He was teasing her, because she wasn't at all beautiful. She was a hunchback lady. And she was straightness challenged, as they would say nowadays. And it's actually said, some of the acharyas say she represents the earth, and there she was all hunched over because of the overburden of demonic forces on the earth. So as soon as she saw Krishna, she was very, very pretty, but hunchback. She immediately thought, there is no one, just spontaneously, naturally, thought, there is no one more deserving of these scents and ointments and decorations than you. So she started decorating Krishna so carefully, and putting sandalwood pulp on them, just very, very, very carefully, with great devotion. And then by the time she finished, she was completely in love with him. And she said, "Oh, dear boy, please come to my house." And Krishna looked and saw, "Uh-oh, Balaram's with me. This is, and all my coward boyfriends. This is some mixing of rasa that doesn't belong at this particular time." So Krishna, being very clever, he said, "Oh, Balaram, did you hear what she said? This must be the personification of jokingness that has come to meet us here. How come everyone isn't laughing? This is the funniest thing. She said we should all come to her house." And then he replied to her and said, "Oh, my dear girl, what more wonderful thing could there be for a lonely person like myself to visit your house at some time?" So he told her later. And then he started, "What a joke this is, isn't it? How come everyone isn't laughing?" See, now you're all laughing also. Because she was, so Krishna said, the personification of Hasyaras, that's what she said, of the mellow of laughing. And actually, Krishna told Akura and Kubja that he would visit their houses. But first he said, "I have to perform the activity that I've come here for, and that is to show Kamsa something." And in the 48th and 49th chapter, Krishna actually does visit both of them. First Kubja's house. And of course, Krishna straightens her out. He goes, he holds her, like this describes, and then he puts his toes on her toes and goes, "This Krishna is the original chiropractor," it appears. And he just like that, and she became a very, very gorgeous lady, just like that. So then Krishna continued with the boys, and he said, because Kamsa had made an arrangement. His real purpose, of course, to bring Krishna to Mathura was to kill him. But if he said, "Krishna, come to Mathura so I can kill you, so I will kill you," he was afraid that Krishna wouldn't come. And Nanda Maharaj obviously wouldn't let him come. So he made a whole drama to support what was going to be the main act of this drama, which would be the killing of Krishna and Balaram by the wrestlers, the gigantic wrestlers. So the drama had to do with a great sacrifice performed to Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva's bow. It was a dhanurjagya, and in Mathura. And that was the main event, to hold a big sacrifice. And then for some casual entertainment, he said, "We will have, for everyone's pleasure, we'll have like a festival, a carnival, a fair, a show of wrestling." So the main event was the dhanurjagya. So Krishna asked, after he was dressed properly, ornamented properly, garlands, fancy clothes, ornaments, golden ornaments, He said, where is the wrestling, where is the sacrifice going to be performed? Where is the bow? So he was pointed towards the arena where the bow was, and he and Balaram just walked in. And it was being guarded, the bow was being guarded by a battalion of Kamsa's soldiers. And Krishna, being so bold, he just walked up, and the soldiers said, who were guarding the bow, said, you can't come here. This is the bow meant for the sacrifice. Krishna just pushed him out of the way, and he took the bow, and he began to string it, and suddenly there was a loud crack. A loud, booming crack that resounded throughout Mathura as the bow broke in half. And Kamsa heard that. And he knew what it was. He sent guards, reinforcements, because he was terrified. Even the mere mention of Krishna's name would terrify him. That was his consciousness. And when you go on chanting in the streets of a city like Melbourne, you see, when you chant Krishna's names, there are so many different people who react in completely different ways when they hear the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Some people just start laughing and jumping up and down. Some people get angry. Some people get curious. Some people say, nah, and some people start imitating. Different consciousnesses. The holy names, which is always the same, is reverberating off different consciousnesses, causing different people to react in different ways. But it's not only the holy name in doing this, it's the whole material world is set up to attract and repulse different people according to the sense gratification concept of pleasure that is in their consciousness. Like an embodied soul in Vrindavan in a pig's body, he jumps in the sewers, the open sewers, and there's things that we won't even want to talk about in these sewers, but they're the kind of things that are in every sewer, and he's in there, and they look like, oh, this is heaven, and they're eating, and this is pig heaven. And for us, just thinking about them in there is so repulsive. And when they get out and they start shaking their bodies, and the water goes, and everyone just goes, oh. But they think it's heaven because that's their consciousness, and this is attractive to them. This is an indication of always what we're attracted to and repulsed by is an indication of our consciousness. So Kamsa was terrified by hearing the name of Krishna. Kamsa sent out more soldiers to protect, to fight with Krishna. And Balaram and Krishna picked up the bow. Each had a half of the bow, and they started beating off all the soldiers and killed them all. So we think, why is Krishna so, why did he do that? He should be like Gandhi or something, you know, just all peace, or the sadhus that, everyone, with the big beards and the big red dots on their heads, shanti, shanti, shanti. We have our concept of how we think the all-attractive, unlimitedly powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, we think he should be like this. With my material consciousness, I'm measuring and judging and imposing my concept upon the unlimited. And what's his consciousness like? It is Bhakta Vatsala. That's what's in the heart of God. he becomes angry. He kills Putana. He becomes angry at Putana because Putana wants to kill the children of Braja. He, God, becomes angry. And on the other hand, when the Brijbasi ladies say, God, Krishna, dance, and I'll give you a sweet, and he'll dance for them. What's in the heart of God is his devotees, and they don't know anything but him, and he doesn't know anything but them. If we want to understand Braja, if we want to understand this world, understand this point. That this world, it's a product in one sense of our consciousness. Some people walk through this world always happy, and other people work and everything seems to work right for them. And things like that. Of course, there's so much karma involved. And other people, it's just the opposite. God doesn't give me what I want. And again, I've learned to turn that one around. As soon as I start thinking God's not giving me what I want, I start to learn to think perhaps maybe I'm not giving him what he wants. Maybe there's some truth in that. So Krishna then beat off everyone with the bows, with Balaram, and that night Kamsa had his warning. Krishna was telling him, I've come. His parents were in prison by Kamsa. I've come. Kamsa didn't sleep that night. Everywhere he saw inauspicious omens. He couldn't sleep. While he was awake, while he was trying to sleep, he was having horrible nightmares. But Krishna, on the other hand, when he broke the bow and killed all the soldiers of Kamsa, he just continued wandering around Mathura. Oh, look at this. Oh, look how big that building is. So nice. Oh, look how the gates are in Mathura. They're so nice. Completely, he didn't care. And then he got back. Where was he sleeping? Outside the city. And that night, Nanda Maharaj was in some anxiety. Why? He couldn't sleep either. Kamsa couldn't sleep, and Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep. Because Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep. He was thinking, oh, Krishna, you're so restless. My boy is so restless. Why did you have to break the bow? Kamsa's going to be so angry at you. Who knows what he's going to do? He's such a demon. Oh, my boy, why did I bring you here? Why did I listen to a cook? Why did I bring you here? Why did I bring you out of the village of Vrindavan? Oh, Krishna. He couldn't sleep. Kamsa couldn't sleep. But their consciousness were completely different. One couldn't sleep out of envy and fear, and the other one couldn't sleep because of love. Because it's the nature. And all parents know this. It's the nature of the parents to be in anxiety about their children. Why? Not everyone in the world's children, but about their children because they love their children. So Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep. Kamsa couldn't sleep. But their lack of sleep was born from opposite consciousness. It's the consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Anukulena, not pratikulena. Anukulena, favorable consciousness. That's bhakti, acting for Krishna's pleasure. And then where did Krishna sleep that night? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that he, because they came in, Nanda Maharaj came in carts. And he and Balaram and the boys, they just put some blankets down underneath the carts and they just slept very soundly because they were acting like village boys. Okay. One other little thing that I forgot to say, and then I'll end. When Sudama, Krishna asked Sudama, Mali Sudama, he said, I'll give you whatever you want. What is it that you want? I will give it. Because he was happy. He was pleased because he had offered him Patram, Pushpam, he had offered him the best of what he had with devotion. And he was so pleased with him. What do you want? I'll give you. And do you remember all those who, some of you devotees were here during the Japa retreat. Do you remember when Maharaj Prickett asked for a blessing from all the sages. Does anyone remember what that blessing was? Yes. One of the things. He asked for three things. Yes. Attachment to Krishna, friendship with the devotees, and compassionate relationship, friendly relationship towards all living beings. That's what he wanted. What a noble, perfect desire and prayer. And of course, you'll never guess when Krishna asked Sudama what he wanted. You never guess what Sudama asked for. He wanted worshipable devotion to Krishna, friendship with the devotees, and compassion for all living entities. And Krishna not only gave him that, but he gave him everything else too. This life, next life. But we can't turn it around again. Okay, I want this life and next life, so I'll pray like this so that Krishna will ask me. No, Krishna is very clever. He's very clever. So, some devotion. Something for Krishna's pleasure. So that's what Krishna wants. Okay, we'll end here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Okay, when do you think it would not be okay?
Well, when you're trying to do something that takes a lot of mental sort of concentration.
Who are you doing it for?
As a service, the temple.
And who are you trying to please?
The devotee.
And, yeah. So are you really trying to please the devotees? I mean, I don't mean to... Well, that's the point. That if we're a little bit more thoughtful and we think, well, why am I doing this? The pay's not good. The food is good, but the pay's not great. But why am I doing it? Ask yourself the question, why am I doing it? And ask it and answer yourself in an honest way. Because I'm in the habit of doing it and I'm supposed to do it. But think, why am I doing it? Am I actually doing it to please the devotees? Am I doing it to please Radha Gopinath? Yes, those are the deities in it. Oh, yes, you've moved. Yes. Yeah. What do you think about Radha Govindanadari? Now, what else?
Sweet.
What do you mean by sweet? And what do you mean? And what do you mean when you say caring? And do they reciprocate? Do you feel that? Okay. So you ask me, should I be more conscious of why I'm doing it when I'm doing my service? And then you told me how wonderful the deities are. So wouldn't it be nice to keep it... Like when you're doing things for your children, you're thinking you're doing it for them. It's just natural. So of course we should develop love for the deities. They're the center of the community. That the deities must be the center. In Melbourne, Radha Balava is the center. And everyone is their servant. So when we do things, we try to do it for the pleasure of Radha Balava, regardless of whether we're sweeping the floor or cooking or managing or collecting or distributing books or this or that or working in an office. We want to deeply develop the consciousness that I'm a servant. But not just a forced servant, an enslaved servant, but a loving servant. Because Radha Govardhana Dari is so sweet, they're so caring, they're so approachable. So let me do something for them. So the tendency, of course, is when you do something regularly every day, is that it, and even with your own children and everything, it becomes mechanical. And then when it becomes mechanical, it becomes boring and tasteless. So let's bring some rush into it, some sweetness into it, by being conscious of who we're doing it for and why we're doing it. Because why are you doing it? You don't have to do it. You're doing it because you want to. So just bring out why you want to. And that's wonderful. Abhishek, you had a... question?
When the Kavach voice was going Krishna,
see, it's there. It's there. The devotion is there. Just have to clear away a little bit of everything else so that we remember why we do what we do. And even if it's simple, why we do what we do, because we appreciate what Prabhupada has done, or when I was hungry, Krishna fed me, or I'm still breathing, or whatever. It has to start with some appreciation, and then some gratitude, and then giving something in return. It's natural for a human being. And all the self-absorption and all the absorption in what we don't have and this and that, that just brings us misery. Let's become miners and see what's really there in our own hearts. And there's something wonderful there. Yes. When the coward boys were going with Krishna to Mathura. Why are you so interested in coward boys all the time? Go ahead.
They would have heard the prayers that the residents of Mathura offered to Krishna, that you're the Supreme Lord, etc. Is there any mention of what they thought?
They thought... When after Krishna left the Govardhan Hill, Krishna was walking with the cowherd boys around Giriraj, just checking to see with the cows and everyone, just checking to see if what damage, harm was done to Giriraj. And at that time, in a secluded place just by Govindakund, all Indra and the demigods approached Krishna and did abhishek. And the coward boys were in the distant. They're watching. Someone has an old-fashioned ringtone. So the cowboys are watching the demigods do arti to Krishna with chamaras and everything like that. And then when the demigods left, the cowherd boy, they came and they saw all the paraphernalia used for the worship, gold chamaras and gold bathing things. And then they started mimicking and imitating the demigods. And, you know, it's all Krishna, you know, look what they're doing, you know, like that. They thought, oh, he's so wonderful. Nothing, same answer, nothing overpowers their love. They can become aware of his opulences. They don't care. We have such a good friend. He's Krishna. If he's a demigod, then we must be demigods too, because we're playing with him. Wow, we have such a good friend. We must be so good too. Also, when the cowherd boys come back from the forest with Krishna every day, if they're herding the cows, the demigods come and they offer prayers to Krishna. And the cowherd boys let's go, you know. They love him. Just like, it's just like that. They just love him. It's hard for us to conceive of love that's so powerful that every other thing, true as it may be, doesn't interfere with the love. They just love him. Is that okay? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned four categories of people, you know. Unconscious, incompetent, conscious, unconscious, competent, and you know the other two categories. What do you, where would you categorize these two kind of people? Like who, A, knowingly do not want to, you know, serve the Lord?
Unconscious, incompetent, incompetent.
And
because they're unconscious of who they are. And they're completely incompetent of how they're using their life. Next.
And the other one would be, you know, like someone who thinks that, they also fall in the same category that, you know, they knowingly they don't want to serve. I don't know.
Incompetent. Unconscious. So when someone is conscious of their incompetence, they become humble. And when someone becomes humble, they become prayerful. And when they become prayerful, they become deep and dependent on Krishna. And then by Krishna's mercy, they improve. And the devotees, this is the way contemporary people analyze things. The devotees never think, I've raised myself to the platform of conscious competence or unconscious competence. They don't think, now I am on that. Look at this one over here. He's consciously incompetent, obviously. And if he's not consciously incompetent, I'm going to make him conscious of how incompetent he is right now. Prabhu. You always have to say Prabhu before you. But he's making clear their choice. But depending upon who they are, and none of those three, either Kubja or the Sudama or the weaver, the tailor, they acted because they wanted what he was promising them. They acted because they were attracted to him. But exactly why he does what he does, I don't know. But I can make up some reason if you want. He wants to demonstrate to us that when we serve Krishna, he's bringing it right in front of us, what the choice is. You give something to Krishna, and you willingly do it, and there's so much benefit. And if you don't, off with the head. And it's really, that's the case. Because death means off with everyone's head. And full identification with the body and the false ego means off with the head. Protecting, becoming a servant of Kamsa, identifying with oneself as a servant of Kamsa in so many different forms means off with the head, being beaten by the bow. So Krishna does things for many reasons. He makes it, he wants to give them, make it clear what their choice is. He wants to let us know what our choices are. So one could say that if I say to you, give me what I want and I'll reward you, and don't give me what I want and I'll chop your head off, then you're not going to get a response born out of love from that type of a deal. It sounds like business. So this is a very low stage of turning to Krishna. Because real Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, means anya bilasita sunyam. I don't want anything. I want to please you. The end of what I'm doing is your pleasure. Nothing else. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays like this. Mahaprabhu prays like this in the Shikshastakam. You can handle me roughly by your embrace. You can make me brokenhearted. But I'm yours. I'm yours. I'm yours. That's called Sharanagati. The great transformation of the soul is when the person, me, I give myself to Krishna. I have so much faith. I have so much love. I've heard about Krishna. I trust him. I accept that he's there, and I trust him, his merciful disposition towards the surrendered. And I place myself in his hands. Gotirte varanam tata. That is where real devotion begins. That is where Vaishnavism begins. Surrender. I am yours. You can handle me as you like. You can feed me. You cannot feed me. You can do as you like. I am yours. So what happens is, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, say, we think, oh, I am yours, Krishna. And then something happens that we don't like, and suddenly we see that our devotional service starts quivering. And you think, well, maybe I'm not yours. Maybe I think I better take care of myself. So Krishna says, okay. But he doesn't really say okay, because but he says, you find out. He gives us our freedom. But ultimately we have to come to the point that we place ourselves in Krishna's hands as his servant, but as his servant. I am yours. And when you say to Krishna, I am yours, then what comes naturally in the consciousness is that you belong to him. I am yours, so therefore you are also mine. That's the glory of Sharanagati, of surrender. It gives the ability, what comes naturally to the consciousness, is that feeling of I belong to Krishna. He is mine. So I'm not sure if I exactly answered your question, but okay, why don't we stop here? Okay, last question.
If I remember well, Kubja was favorable to Krishna because she was in her previous birth an Apsara who was laughing at looking at Astavakra, looking at his the curves in his body, and therefore he curses her to become a Kubja. And therefore, she comes as Kubja, but then carries the devotional activity from her previous life. Therefore, she was naturally inclined towards Krishna.
I personally never heard that, but it could be. Could be in some Purana or something. I don't know. But it says that she was one of the acharyas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that some people say that she was in a previous, she was the earth, a portion of the earth who was overburdened, and also expansion of Rukmini. Obviously not a ordinary position to be able to decorate Krishna in that way and so immediately respond. Where is that written? Anuruddha Prabhu, did you just look at
it? I was reading it while you were telling the story. So it's not that I'm a great
Okay. Yes.
Can you explain how even lust for Krishna is beneficial? Like when I read the Krishna book, I may be wrong. My understanding was that she had the desire to serve Krishna, but especially when he straightened her, she had more lust towards him.
What's the difference between lust and love? Love means the beloved is the center. And lust means I am the center. Krishna Indriya Priti or Atma Indriya Priti. So that's described in the Krishna book, and you remember correctly. And then when Krishna went to our house, by the touch of his lotus feet, she was purified of that selfishness and became pure. So that was Krishna's mercy. So he saw it was mixed. And also it's described in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, the first chapter, that if we can focus our mind on Krishna, even if the motivation isn't pure, it will purify us and bring us to the perfect position. Because if it had to wait before we were pure, before we could begin, no one would ever begin. So Krishna is so kind, and his personal potency and personal form is so purifying, that if we somehow or another, even through anger, through envy, this is the verse from the, I can't remember the exact verse, or for simple devotion, or love, spontaneous love, if we focus our consciousness on Krishna, somehow or another, still, it's so purifying. Did that answer your question? And Krishna personally came to Kubja after, and then he personally removed all remnants of selfishness from her heart and gave her pure love. Okay. Because we have to start, this is the point. We start with patram pushpam palam toyam. This is the point. Opportunity. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Radhabalava ki jai, Sri Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead ki jai, Sri Sri Gonatai ki jai, Sri Sri Lord Shankadeva ki jai, Sri Sri Radhabalava Bhaktavinda ki jai.